Welcome to the Red and Bold Show. I am your co-host, Mark Adams, and this is your other co-host, Anthony Robertson, right next to me. You can find us at, you can find me at 49ers Camelot, wherever you watch or listen. You can find Anthony at 49ers Cutback, wherever you watch or listen. So, Anthony, great to talk to you, man. How's things going?
It's going good. I'm excited to talk 49ers football. And there's a lot to talk about because Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are at the owners' meetings, and they're talking to the media pretty much for the first time in a long time. And so we're getting very clear details on some of the coaching staff responsibilities. We're getting ideas on Brandon Ayuk and also some of the free agents that they brought in. So I'm super excited to get into that and start talking 49ers football. The more distance we get from what happened in February and we get closer to the draft, I feel like there's a lot more optimism now about 49ers football. And I think people are starting to come back, too. There's people that have been away, and they're ready to come back and get excited about 49ers football again.
Well, just as soon as you say there's more optimism, today we came out with the 49ers Web Zone mailbag, and there was a question in there directed at me. Why don't you ask Kyle Shanahan why he can't run the ball in the third quarter of the Super Bowl? Which Super Bowl? Either one. And so it's true. I mean, the 49ers ran the ball, I think, like five times in the third quarter, and they threw the ball 10 times. Now, some of those, if you go back and you do the play-by-play, you can see that some of those passes – may have been runs, but there was a false start by Aaron Banks or something like that that moved them back. So I think that there's situational football where they may say we're going to run the ball more in a specific quarter or whatever, and then you get in and there are things that happen that don't allow for you to run the ball. So those things are going to eat at us. You know, you have both of those. You have, why didn't Frank Gore touch the ball inside the 5-yard line against the Ravens years ago? So we could say all that kinds of stuff, but hey, it happens. So we've got some people in here. Bryant Culp is in here. What's up, Bryant? And Josh is in here. What's up, fellas? Passed out and fell down 15 stories yesterday. Holy crap. Dang, man. I'm glad you're okay. 15 stairs. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He said 15 stairs.
A little bit better.
15 stories. How are you alive, man? Wow, that's crazy. So Mr. Corey's in here. Stream Elements is in here as well. So just excited to get in here and talk about 49ers and what's going on with everything that's that we saw this week and heard this week from Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. So let's jump into that. So yesterday, Kyle Shanahan spoke with the media, talked to reporters at the NFL meetings in Orlando. And among the things that he said was that Nick Sorensen is the defensive coordinator. He will call the defensive plays. He will put together the game plan and all that. But he did say, talking about Brandon Staley, that Brandon will be a big part of game plans, implementing a lot of our defense here in the offseason and during each week. He's been a big part of free agency, helped us with the draft, and would be a huge asset to the whole coaching staff. I thought this was interesting, especially when he says that Nick Sorensen is the defensive coordinator, but then he also says that Brandon Staley is going to be very involved in the game plan. I mean, did he specify defensive game plan? That was what I assumed. And so just wondering how, if you're Nick Sorensen, do you like having this guy looking over your shoulder, so to speak, or are you excited that you have an extra set of eyes, a bright mind by all accounts there to help you? How are you seeing this if you're Brandon Staley, or I mean, if you're Nick Sorensen?
Yeah, one of the most important things as a coach is to make sure you have smart coaches around you. That's the first thing. If you're confident and you have confidence in your own abilities, you're not really concerned about how good the other coach is. You want good coaches and smart minds around you because ultimately they're going to make you a better coach. and challenging each other is a good thing, and collaborative work is a good thing. Kyle Shanahan was the best Kyle Shanahan when he had Mike McDaniel, and he has these guys around him that constantly work with him and elevate his game. They challenge each other. And so I think Brandon Staley being a part of this fold is exactly what Kyle Shanahan needed, because Kyle doesn't want to be focused on the defense. He wants to focus on the offense. He just wants to oversee everything as CEO when it comes to defense. Now Staley can get in there and work collaboratively with Sorensen. One of the things that I found interesting when Kyle Shanahan was talking about Sorensen being the defensive coordinator, he said he was really close last year. He felt like it was close to being the guy last year. Mm-hmm. And this year, he really felt like he elevated to another level. He started handling meetings on Thursdays, and the everybody really likes him, and they're used to hearing from him. So it was a case where Sorensen wasn't quite ready last year, but this year he is. I thought that was a clear determination from Shanahan that he liked what he's seen from Sorensen. And then I just think this is a good move. Two heads are better than one. He didn't want to hire Staley as defensive coordinator. He didn't want to wholesale change the defense. But getting him in there with things that he's really good at, game planning, he's been in the NFC West. That helps as well. To me, this was a smart move. And now two heads are better than one. Sorensen will be able to bounce ideas off of Staley, and Staley will be able to help Sorensen with his game planning, his blitz implementation. To me, this is a great move for the 49ers and exactly kind of what we were thinking once Brandon Staley come on board.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know much about Nick Sorensen. None of us really do. And so all we can do is go off of the fact that he has been given different duties throughout his coaching career and has stepped up. And, for example, when he became the special teams coordinator in, I think it was Jacksonville, that unit was not good, but the coaching staff was really bad. The head coach was bad. It was just a bad environment. And he kind of, Nick Sorensen kind of got thrown into that. So yeah, I don't really blame him for that situation, but then, there's the situation where Johnny Holland goes down for a bit due to some health issues. Sorensen steps in and starts coaching the linebackers. And then there's this whole ball meeting that he's been doing here, at least this last year, maybe the last 2 years, for their turnover meetings. And so I like what Kyle said when he said the players really like him. So that's good. It's hard to gauge just from the little bit that you hear what kind of defensive coordinator he's going to be. But I do like the fact that Brandon Staley is there with him, because he is thought of to be a pretty bright guy. We've seen some of his former players sign with the 49ers in free agency. And that kind of goes, we talked about that a few weeks ago, actually. And then Kyle reiterated that. That Brandon Staley has been helping them in free agency. So I think that that's a positive thing as well. So Josh said he's going to bring a nice flair. DJ said, good, maybe he'll stay for more than a couple of years. Yeah, I think the 49ers need some stability there. Mr. Corey jumping into some draft stuff here. Yeah, we're going to talk. We may try to answer a question or two here about the draft, but over the next few weeks, we'll get into that a lot more. So Shanahan also talked about Isaac Yedem, the cornerback that they signed, who used to be with the Saints. And what Shanahan said is that he has a shot to be the outside corner opposite of Mooney Ward. That would obviously put Diamador Lenore inside. So what do you think about that? Because what I've seen, I haven't gone back and watched film. I've just gone back and done a little bit of research, whether it's on, Pro Football Stats. Because I wanted to learn a little bit more about him. And sounds like he started 8 games last year. When he came in, He played really well. I think he had like 14 passes that he broke up in that span. So, which is pretty impressive, I think, for a guy that only played, you know, not even half the season as far as a starter goes. So what do you think about this? Do you like the thought of having Isaac Yiadom on the outside with Lenore inside, or would you rather them keep Lenore on the outside and find somebody else to go inside?
I think it all depends on how it plays out. I know that in free agency, finding a nickel corner that you could put in that spot and play really well wasn't going to be cheap. So they've elected to go with a cheaper route with finding somebody on the outside and potentially having D'Amour or Lenore play inside. I think right now it kind of stacks up the same way that they were doing last year with Ambry Thomas, with Yiadom coming in and, you know, in obvious nickel package situations and D'Amour or Lenore moving inside in those situations. So 70% of the time, 75% of the time, that would be the case. And he looked pretty good last year with New Orleans. But once again, he was in Denver when Brandon Staley is there with Vic Fangio. So he understands what they do with that coverage, that, you know, quarters coverage, that Palms defense. So he already fits into the zone idea. He's long. He's got length. He plays zone pretty nice. So just seeing what he did last year in those eight games, I think gave the 49ers some confidence that they were upgrading the cornerback position. And then they're going to approach it in the draft as well. They're going to go after cornerbacks. They could go after a nickel corner. There's some really good nickel corners available. So they could address that and then put a competition on all of these guys together, because I think they just want the two best corners on the outside that they can get. I think ultimately D'Amour Lenore and Charvarius Ward would be the two best, but the best three corners when you go to nickel could be Isaac Yiadom on the outside with D'Amour Lenore inside. And Lenore is an absolute pit bull. That's why they call him the hyena in the inside against the run. So I think right now that's the best situation for the 49ers, but we'll see what happens once we get into the draft and we get maybe the tail end of free agency too. There's still high priced cornerbacks that are available waiting for money. Tre'Davious White got money from the Rams. You know, what is out there for Stephon Gilmore? What is out there for some of those other players? I think 49ers will know better once we get through the draft.
Yeah, and if he keeps Ambry Thomas off the field, then that makes me happy. But we've picked on Ambry enough. That, by the way, that website that I was looking at was Pro Football Reference. I use that all the time, so it's crazy that I couldn't remember the name of it. But I use it every single week, like when I write articles, because you can find a lot of information on a specific player or on a team. You know, if you want to look up the 1987 49ers, you can go and you can find a lot of information on that team on that website. So Pro Football Reference, that's what that's called. I'm not paid to promote them, by the way.
I do like them as well.
Yeah. So Kyle Shanahan talked about the run defense and said, look, hey, we got worse as the season went on. He actually said, we got more run on last year than I've ever seen in my career. That's what happens when you don't stop that bleeding right away. People keep attacking it. That made it a bigger challenge for us and something we have to get better at. They have to get better at stopping the run. I feel like for much of the season, they were great at it, but that was mainly early on. As the season progressed, they got worse at it. You know, there was that Bengals game when they couldn't stop the pass or the run. If they were able to stop the pat or the run, then maybe the Joe Burrow doesn't go off like he did. You know, they did pretty well against the Ravens, which I thought that might be a challenging game. But then in the playoffs, just horrendous. I know they were better in the Super Bowl until Patrick Mahomes decided to start keeping the ball late in the game. But this is an area that they have to get better at. How are they going to get better at stopping the run? They lost Arik Armstead. We've talked about the fact that Malik Collins is not as good against the run, but they did sign Jordan Elliott, who is a run stopper, and he's like starter quality type. He's not going to be starting with the 49ers, but I'm curious what you think they might do to improve that run defense.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is going to be marrying that defensive line and linebacker group with the secondary. And I think that was one of the big downfalls of Steve Wilks' defense and run scheme, was the fact that it didn't always work. You had linebackers out of alignment, and you know it's because of the scheme compared to what the defensive line was. And some of the gap responsibilities were getting forgotten, and a lot of that was the scheme just looked a little out of sync. And I think that is something that you recognize on film, and that's exactly what offensive coordinators started to recognize. They started to find holes within the 49ers defense strategically and schematically that they could take advantage of. And the 49ers had less of a player problem as they had more of a scheme problem. And I think that was a real case when it came to the run defense. And that's exactly what they got to work on. The things on the outside, I mean, that was the weakness, was those toss crack plays on the outside. And a lot of that was because of alignment. And once the 49ers figure out the alignment and get that taken care of, and I think that's a Brandon Staley, Nick Sorensen thing that they can definitely work on, is I think they'll be able to stop the run again. DeMeco Ryans had no problem stopping the run on the outside. Neither did Robert Sulla, with pretty much very similar talent, if not the exact same talent. So I think it was more schematic. You got to give credit to the offensive coordinators around the league. But I think that the 49ers have the necessary players to get it done. And I think as long as they get the alley defender and, you know, the guys who are going to do the tackling in the alley in the right spots, as long as they're able to squeeze it down on the outside with the corners, I think they'll be just fine. So to me, this is less of a player problem, which would be a real problem, and more of a schematic thing that you can fix.
Is this a wide nine issue? I mean, you mentioned that Sala and DeMeco didn't have problems with the run, but we've heard that the wide nine is susceptible to being gashed at times. So is this a wide nine issue? Is that something that they should go away from more, or is it just as simple as the scheme last year just wasn't right?
Yeah. I mean, the wide nine should actually cause more problems inside of that outside defender, not outside of that outside defender. Him being outside, they should be able to set the edge better. The fact that that wasn't happening means you had a problem with your press defender on the outside, squeezing that play back in. And then you also had a problem with your alley defender coming up and making the tackle. Some of that changes in the secondary, of course, but I think it was the way it was coached. I really do. I think there were things that I saw on film, and actually it broke it down last year, where if you just moved a linebacker, a half a man, they were going to be able to stop those plays. And I think they were unwilling to do that. And that is a scheme problem. So I don't think it's the wide nine. The wide nine does present some interesting obstacles to overcome. But there are advantages to it as well. And with every defense, there's strengths and there's weaknesses. You know what your weaknesses are. You just have to make sure that you counteract and don't allow offenses to take advantage of those, whether that's with movement, with that's schematically moving players in alignment. Alignment, assignment, so important. 49ers have the guys that can get the assignment done, but if their alignment is creating a situation where they can't get there, that is on the coaches. They need to make sure they get everyone in the right spots, and I think that was a problem during the season.
Yeah, and certainly losing Cleveland Farrell for the playoffs or that postseason run didn't help because he was good in the run game. When Chase Young started playing, that wasn't his strength, and we now know that he had an injury that he was playing through, and so maybe that was part of the problem. I saw that Mr. Corey said, "I'm tired of Ambry Thomas, and I'm a Michigan fan." And Josh said, "Need to address nickel in the draft." Like what DJ said here, but with the new rules, everything is leaning to offense. Remember, the best defense is a good offense. You know, we're going to talk about that offense here in just a minute. BV50 said, "The real elephant in the room is drafting O-line for depth. After all, we have a franchise quarterback. Protecting Brock is a priority." Yes, we're going to talk about Brock here in just a few minutes. So the next thing that Shanahan said, and I'm going to be interested to see what Mr. Corey, the Michigan fan, thinks about this, but Shanahan said that Ronnie Bell will compete to be the return specialist. Are you excited about that? Are you nervous about it? Do you feel like you're going to throw up hearing that? What do you think about Ronnie Bell potentially returning punts and kicks?
Very nervous about him returning punts for sure. I don't think anyone saw anything that makes them feel excited about Ronnie Bell as a punt returner. To me, that this is something Kyle has to say. I'm sure they still plan on addressing this. I think Danny Gray is an option. I also believe that they're going to have to come up with an option. I think he brought up the draft as well. And I think that might be where they go and try to approach it. But the punt return for the 49ers has been an absolute adventure for a while now. Ray McLeod, it was chaos trying Brandon Ayuk. That didn't work. It has just not been smooth sailing for the 49ers as far as return. And Ronnie Bell, even though I think he's a guy that will do a good job eventually of receiving the football and being a guy that can hold on to that ball, I just haven't seen it yet. And so that makes me nervous. And with some of the new kickoff rules, I know we're going to get into those later. Things change a little bit. So we'll see how much Ronnie Bell would actually be needed. But I will say this, if Ronnie Bell is going to make the San Francisco 49ers team in 2024, he needs to be the return guy. I think if he loses that gig, there's a real shot that he does not make this roster, because right now they brought back Chris Conley and they feel very confident about him. And if for some reason Danny Gray shows what I saw in training camp last year, there's a real chance Danny Gray would beat out Ronnie Bell. So I think that's a competition between those two, and whoever loses could be out. And that will be an interesting battle when we come to training camp.
Yeah, and we have to remember that Bell was a rookie last year, and he was thrown into some of those situations due to injuries, whether that was playing as a wide receiver when Brandon Ayuk missed a game, or whether it was returning punts when Ray McLeod was injured. So I don't want to pick on him too much. Bryant said that Bell was good in Michigan on special teams. And he said, Ronnie Bell, let's go. Red Eye said, Bell is a fumble waiting to happen. And so that's kind of how I felt about it when he was back there. Mr. Corey said, yes, I am, because that's the only thing I think he would be decent at, because he's bad. Yeah, that's hopefully he can improve in his second year. So, I want to talk about Brock Purdy for a second, because Kyle Shanahan talked about Brock and how he's excited that the quarterback gets to actually have his first real offseason. So 2 years ago, he was preparing for the draft. Then last year, he was rehabbing from the UCL tear. And so now he actually gets to have a real offseason where he can work on things that he needs to get better at and improve, instead of just like working to get healthy. How big is it for Brock Purdy to be able to focus on getting better this offseason rather than on just getting better from an injury, actually working on his craft?
Yeah, this is huge. This is what every quarterback needs to be able to get better and ascend. And we've seen quarterbacks consistently get better through off seasons because you're allowed to work on the things that you know you need to work on. The crazy part is we actually saw Brock Purdy get better from year one to year two, even though he was just rehabbing an injury. And now he's going to have a full off season to work on the throws, work on the footwork, work on the cerebral part of the game that maybe he is still picking up from Kyle Shanahan's offense and from what defenses are showing him as far as scheme. So this is a very good time for Brock Purdy to be able to work on timing with his wide receivers as well, because last year they didn't have a lot of work in the offseason with Ayuk and Debo and Kittle, and now you're going to have all that. So this is going to be huge. This could be a big difference for Brock Purdy. He might actually elevate his game even higher. And if that happens, yeah, Jed York talked about, you know, Brock Purdy getting a lot of money. It could be even more than we're all anticipating, because that's the kind of offseason that could be coming. Now, also, we don't know what Brock Purdy's ceiling is. We just don't. Mm-hmm. But these are going to be kind of those tail signs to figure out exactly, have we seen the best Brock Purdy, or is the Brock Purdy that we're going to see in the future even better than we see now? And I think if it becomes better, the 49ers were a couple of plays away from winning a Super Bowl, and Brock Purdy could be the big reason why they end up getting those things done. He's able to read blitzes, pick up on some of those things, get the ball out quickly, make some adjustments at the line of scrimmage. Those are all cerebral parts of the game that are going to come, not to mention the physical gifts that are going to get better. We saw the movement in the pocket I thought was tremendous this year. Less scrambling to the left, more moving, stepping up in the pocket, finding ways to get rid of the football, extending plays. I think Brock Purdy can get a lot better. I think this could be a huge offseason for him.
Yeah, even – if you would have asked me this time last year, what's one thing you want to see Brock Purdy get better at? And I actually said this one time when somebody asked me, I said, I want to see him stop doing that thing where he spins around and rolls to his left. Because when he does that, he can't see what he's turning into. And I think that's just a very dangerous move that he would make. Dangerous from a turnover standpoint, dangerous from an injury standpoint. And I wanted to see him stop doing that. And he really did a good job of almost eliminating that from what he does. So I feel like that was a big thing. But Red Eye says a good O-line would elevate Purdy's game. That is completely true. I want to ask you this. How important is Brandon Ayuk to Brock Purdy? Does Brock Purdy need Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah, I think the offense needs Brandon Ayuk. And I think Brock Purdy in turn needs him as well, because anytime you have more weapons, it's just better. And you're going to get some one-on-one situations that you know Brandon Ayuk can win. But there seems to be a real chemistry between Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk. And when you get chemistry, you get success. So I think it's very important for you to have weapons for Brock Purdy to get the ball to. I don't think you can replace Brandon Ayuk with a draft pick for sure. I don't think that there's a veteran available right now on the open market that you could step in and replace Brandon Ayuk. And even if you could replace the production, could you replace the chemistry that they have? I don't think so. So Brock Purdy definitely has some comfort with Ayuk as his number one weapon. And I think that those guys will get even better in the offseason. So I think he's very important to Ayuk or to Purdy's success. And I think Purdy's actually very important to Ayuk's success as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. They do play off of each other really well. Mr. Corey said Purdy isn't going to elevate anything with Burford, McKivitz, and Brendel on that O-line. Yeah, well, right now he's stuck with them. So, and it's not going to be long. He's going to be losing Trent Williams as well. So hopefully they can address offensive line in this draft, because not only, I mean, we talked about this last week, that there's not going to be a tackle that's going to come in and beat McKivitz right off the bat. There's not going to be a center that's going to come in and beat Brendel right off the bat. May not even beat Brendel for 2024 because of Kyle Shanahan putting so much on his center. It's hard for a rookie to come into Kyle's system and do well at that position. But they definitely have to start thinking about the future. So, yeah, Josh said no drafted offensive lineman is beating out our starters immediately. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. Those guys, they need to be better, but they're not as bad as we think they are. They're decent during the season, but the problem that I see is when they get in those big postseason games. So the Super Bowl against the Chiefs back in 2019, the 2021 NFC Championship against the Rams, the 2022 Championship against the Eagles, and then the Super Bowl this year against the Chiefs, especially late in that game, when there's been those high pressure situations where it seems like everybody knows they're going to throw the ball, they seem to struggle to block.
Yeah, I think in 2019, you got to remember Ben Garland starting at center. You don't have Weston Richburg. You have Person as the right guard. That offensive line, you know, with young Mike McGlinchey, that line wasn't really built for that situation, and they got overwhelmed. And I think in 2023 in the Super Bowl, I thought the line did, you know, decent. I thought that there were moments where they definitely didn't look good, and that happens. And that's part of the reason I want to see Brock Purdy continue to elevate his cerebral part of the game, because we've seen quarterbacks be able to take control and understand where blitzes are coming from. And the more in tune he gets with that, the more he can help Jake Brendel with that type of situation. The understanding of the offense means elevating the offensive line's play as well. I think the offensive line wasn't as bad as everyone thinks. I think we got to remember Christian McCaffrey was the leading rusher in the entire league last year. The 49ers had one of the best offenses. They only gave up 31 sacks on the season. Was some of that because of the players around? Yes. Was some of that because Brock Purdy was able to escape the pocket? Yes. But part of the reason that you're able to make up for it is you're paying those players around a lot of money that you can't afford to pay the offensive line. So those guys do have to take the pressure off the offensive line. It's a team effort. I do believe they need to get better on the offensive line. I think they're going to address it in the draft, probably with an interior guy and an outside guy. But I think the line is not quite as bad as what everyone thinks and not as good as they want them to be. But let's see what happens when you bring all five starters back and the chemistry that they're going to have playing together and see if that can elevate them a little bit. Can they go from being 22nd to being 12th? If they can improve like that, you might just get enough to be able to get over the hump.
Yeah, it's a great point. Let's move on. John Lynch spoke to reporters on Monday at the annual meeting, and he said something interesting, something that got my attention, that when the 49ers signed Yetur Gross-Matos, that he heard from several teams who said, man, we were going after him. And so it just kind of got me wondering because, you know, we've talked about how he's a defensive end who on passing situations can move inside to a defensive tackle if they decide to use him that way. But is that when I heard that multiple teams were really coming after him, to me, that kind of made me think, is this a signing that maybe we're overlooking? Should we be more excited about Yetur Gross-Matos than we have been? His ceiling is supposed to be pretty high.
Yeah, I think this is a signing that everyone should be excited about because Gross-Matos fits that Arden Key role, and that was significant in the 49ers scheme for a little while, especially under DeMeco Ryans. And I think this would be a signal that that system is coming back. We've seen Arden Key have success, Charles Aminihu. Both of them had huge success that equaled huge contracts on the open market. So we don't know what Gross-Matos was going to get on the open market, but we do know is he believes a stop in San Francisco is going to maximize his ability to get a contract on the open market. But he's a young guy with, like you said, tremendous upside. He's got physicality to be able to play outside and inside, but also speed to be able to cause some real problems for interior offensive linemen. That's why I like this and the role that they're going to use so much is because now you can take Collins off the field and you could put Gross-Matos on there on third down and third and long situations. Now you're rushing Floyd, Gross-Matos, Hargrave, and Bosa. You've got your four best pass rushers out there together. I think that's a good situation. It also means more blitzes, more zone blitzes, and also more line stunts because when you have more athletic defensive linemen, they can run more line stunts. This was an absolute knock out of the park signing for the 49ers. He fits the scheme particularly well, especially in that Arden Key / Charles Aminihu role.
Josh asked, is Drake Jackson an afterthought?
I don't think he's an afterthought, but I definitely think they are a you better show up and do something or you might not be on this roster because I don't think they're done. I think they'll look edge rusher in the draft and they're going to bring in competition. And I believe as of right now, Robert Beal Jr. has an advantage over Drake Jackson, mm-hmm. even though he only played, you know, almost 60 snaps last year. He was better against the run. And I feel like he's a guy that they like a lot. So Drake is going to have to step in. He's going to have to make some plays. I think they're hoping that here he's going to come in year three and he's going to make something happen. But I think if he doesn't, the 49ers will be all unwilling to go ahead and move on from Drake Jackson, unfortunately. Does that mean they trade him for a seventh round pick or they just go ahead and outright release him? He's going to have to step up. Young player, lots of talent. But you can't wait on guys like that anymore. You got to have players out there that can make plays. And he was so bad against the run last year. They just need more production from the edge defenders.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I think that Robert Beal Jr. is ahead of Drake Jackson. He may not be technically right now, but I think that by the time things are said and done in training camp or whatever, I think that it will be that way. Mr. Corey said Javon Hargrave's money should have went towards keeping Ebukam and Charles Aminihu. I definitely would agree. I don't know that I agree, but I would love for them to have kept Aminihu I wasn't huge on Ebikam. I guess he was better than what we saw from Chase Young, which is crazy to think, but I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, the problem with it is Ebikam and Charles Omenihu were averaging 4.5 sacks on the outside. Between them, you were getting 9. You got 7.5 from Hargrave from interior defensive line, a defensive line the year before in 2022 that got 3 sacks combined. So the production you got from Hargrave was huge there. I know it's not double digit, but I like the idea. And now we're sitting in a situation where there was going to be a tough decision to come with Eric Armstead. Now the decision's been made, and we still have Hargrave there. So ultimately, I like Ebikam. I like Charles Omenihu. I would have loved to have kept him. Both of them got double digit and millions of dollars out on the open market. You pay $20 million and get 9 sacks, or you pay $20 million and get 7.5 from the inside. I'm taking 7.5 from the inside because I know I can get guys on the outside that can make plays, including Nick Bosa. To me, I don't have a problem with the Hargraves deal. I thought that it was a great deal. I still think there's a potential for him to even have a bigger season. I didn't see it as as big a disappointment as everyone else did. But I mean, yeah, I think that that was a move they felt was necessary to get help from the interior defensive line, because that's when the 49ers are the best. Not just when they're getting pressure off the outside, but when that defensive line is collapsing the pocket.
Yeah, quarterbacks don't like pressure coming right into their face. David Campbell said Armstead missing so many games hurt Hargrave too. Yeah, and you actually said that a couple of weeks ago, that you think that he would have had a much better season if Armstead had been healthy. Armstead missed a lot of games, so certainly not really Hargrave's fault. Let me ask you this, because I've been having fans of the team ask me this question, so I wanted to get your thoughts on it. If the 49ers draft one of the players whose legendary dad or brother played for San Francisco, who would you want? Brendan Rice, Frank Gore Jr., Luke McCaffrey, or Tariq Owens?
Yeah, you know, with all this going on, there's been a big part of me that kind of got frustrated with the whole nepotism, you know, everyone wanting to draft all these guys. But I have went and watched a lot of the film on these guys. And to me, it would have to be Brendan Rice. And I know that Brendan Rice has got a lot to live up to. And I don't know if San Francisco is the best place for him to try to live up to the expectations. But just watching his film, he's a very good receiver. I mean, he's a solid third round pick in this NFL draft. He can block. He runs good routes. He's got enough speed to separate. He's got good hands. So to me, he's a solid wide receiver. To me, he's a good fit for the 49ers. And with McCaffrey, that would be drafting complete upside, because you don't know really how good of a wide receiver he could be. He only played 1 year wide receiver, was a quarterback, which we know can be good as far as how he runs routes, understanding coverages, all those things can be good. We just haven't seen a lot from him. I think that both of those players are very good fits for the 49ers, but I think Rice overall is a more well-rounded and better fit right now as far as being ready for what they do as far as blocking, running routes, and catching the football. So to me, I would go with Brendan Rice. But, I mean, we got some talent. I didn't even know that Tariq Owens was coming out in the draft until I saw that post last week. So to me, that one caught me by surprise. I have seen a little bit of him now. He's a guy that's a friend's draftable player. So we'll see if he gets drafted or if he ends up being an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, I see some people in the chat saying Gore. That was my answer, was Frank Gore Jr., simply because I just felt like the way the 49ers go through running backs, I mean, I feel like they were lucky last year with McCaffrey being healthy. That may not happen again. And so I think a running back could be a good one. And I feel like he's different. You know, he's got some speed. He has some quickness. He's not as powerful as his dad, but I think that he might be a good one. Josh said Rice is going to go too early. Let's see a couple other ones saying Frank Gore Jr. But yeah, we talked about it. Bryant Culp, who's here in the chat, said he had me on his show on Saturday, And he was one of the ones that asked me that question. And I, you know, I just threw out some scenarios. What happens if Brendan Rice ends up in Kyle Shanahan's doghouse while Jerry is running around on the sidelines before home games? What happens if Frank Gore Jr. Isn't playing enough while his dad works for the 49ers? What happens if they cut Tariq Owens? What's Terrell going to say? I mean, we know that he can go off. So what's he going to say? And what happens if Luke McCaffrey gets cut with Christian on the team? You know, it just, there's some awkward situations, but I think it would be fine. I think they're going to pick, if they pick one of these guys, it's going to be because they believe they're going to help the team and they're going to play them accordingly. And I don't think that Jerry or Frank Gore or, well, T.O., I wouldn't put anything past him, but the other guys, Christian, his dad, you know, they're not going to say anything. I don't worry too much about that.
No, McCaffrey already had a brother that was on the 49ers and they released him.
That's true.
There have been guys who have come in before that they've had to cut, you know, and it doesn't always work out. I think that if you're spending a draft pick, and in Brendan Rice's case, like, you know, Josh said, it could be a higher draft pick. I wouldn't go, you know, anywhere near the second round, but if it was in the third round, late third round, that would make sense to me, like pick 124. As far as McCaffrey, I mean, I wouldn't go earlier than a fifth round pick. So I think that these are down the road guys. Frank Gore Jr., you know, it could be seventh round. It could be undrafted free agent. I think that would make a lot of sense. Same with Tariq Owens. But yeah, it would be interesting if Jerry Rice was rooting on his son that played for the 49ers. I think that would be definitely interesting. The one thing I'll say about Jerry is I guarantee you he would have no problem with his son being in the doghouse because he would feel like he deserved it if he was there. That's just the kind of person that Jerry Rice is. But yeah, that would make for some interesting times. Who wouldn't like to see a celebration of Jerry Rice's son with Jerry Rice after a touchdown? It'd be kind of interesting.
I mean, like Frank's a legend. T.O.'s a legend. McCaffrey's working his way to be a legend. I mean, I like Ed McCaffrey a lot because he helped the 49ers win a Super Bowl. But Christian obviously is elite. The one that I worry about though is Rice, because even though those other dads and brother are legendary to the fan base, none come as close as Jerry Rice. And so to have a wide receiver with Rice on the back of his jersey, the fans' expectations for him are going to be, I think, probably too high for him. And not anything against him, but he's never going to be his dad. In fact, none of these players are going to be as good as their dad. Maybe Luke McCaffrey, but he's not going to be as good as his brother. And so that's my only concern, is that how much pressure would be on these guys, especially Brendan Rice, being on the team that their dad essentially made it into the Hall of Fame on.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of pressure. To be honest, I don't think, you know, any of these guys end up on the 49ers as far as draft picks. I think if they were undrafted free agents, that's where it makes a lot of sense for the 49ers. But I've thought this for a while, that I don't think they're actually going to go that direction. I think there's other needs when these players are going to be drafted. I don't think the 49ers are looking to draft wide receiver that high, especially if they're going to work out an extension with Brandon Ayuk. So I know they have been talking to Corley. They're working on some guys who are probably going to go in the second or third round. But I think those guys are real fits for the 49ers. So I don't think it ends up being any of these guys. But I do think it's been interesting to see fans' reactions to these players potentially coming to San Francisco and kind of the lineage of their family and how much that means to 49er fans. I think 49er fans definitely love lineage players. And so it's kind of interesting to me how much fans are building up these players, some beyond the obvious you know, abilities of the players, and some are just kind of keeping it real. So it's interesting to me.
Mr. Corey asked, have you guys heard Elijah Mitchell on the trade block? I have not heard that. I would be kind of surprised if it did happen. It's going to be because he can't stay healthy, because when he's healthy, he's really good. Now he is, is this his final year of his deal?
You know, I'm trying to remember. I think he was drafted in 2021.
Yeah.
So it'd be 21, 22, 23. So yeah, he'd be going into his fourth year. So, I mean, that would make him a trade potential just because he's going in the last year of his deal. But what are you going to get for him? You know, I mean, that's the key, is what is going to come out. You know, are you going to get a seventh round pick? Well, you might as well let him leave and get a comp pick back for him and get a whole season of Elijah Mitchell potentially on your roster. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not at least talked about and discussed around the league as a potential trade option. I don't know if the 49ers have officially put him on the trade block, but I'm guessing they would listen to phone calls. But I think they like Elijah Mitchell. I think they would love to have this exact running back room for 2024. I think they feel confident with Elijah Mitchell being able to do most of the things Christian McCaffrey can do, which I think is a little bit different for Jordan Mason. I think Mason has a different skill set. He's more of a change of pace kind of guy. So I don't know if they're ready to go Jordan Mason as running back two as much as everyone wants it. I think they want a guy that kind of fits the system and fits what Christian McCaffrey mold is a little bit closer.
Yeah. Let's talk a couple of the new rules. I wanted to get your take as a coach. What are your feelings on the new hip drop tackle rule? I think it's terrible. I just don't know how they, I don't know. Like when you're running full speed and you got to bring down a guy, you can't go high. You can't go at his knees. So like, what are they going to do? How are they going to bring, especially if you're a smaller defensive back and you've got to tackle Rob Gronkowski, you know, I mean, what are they supposed to do?
Yeah. Tackling from behind has just got very difficult. How are you going to bring Debo down from behind? I mean, are you swiping at his ankles? You know, what exactly are you doing? And I think that becomes the aiming point. You know, I mean, now you're grabbing onto someone's waist and then dropping your body. I think now people are going to aim for the back of the knees and ankles as far as tackling, because like you brought up, you can't go high. That's a horse collar. You can't grab them and then drop down on their legs. That's a problem. I think this is going to be very difficult for NFL players to adjust to. It's going to take several years for players to adjust to this new rule. You'll probably see some 15-yard penalties because it's a natural thing that you do as far as football. You go to make a tackle, and then you drop your body weight, because when you're a smaller guy like you brought up with a cornerback and you're trying to tackle a big tight end, what else are you going to do to get this guy down? And so I think that they've been changing the tackling rules for the last 10 to 15 years. It's made it more difficult. It's making it even harder and harder to get receivers to the ground. And so what I think they're ultimately hoping is that this is going to create more explosive plays. They're hoping for more offense. They're hoping for more touchdowns. They're hoping for more fantasy football. As the league continues to grow in popularity, traditionalists are going to get frustrated with how the game is trending. But for the most part, this is kind of the trend. And as it gets more popular, this is what people want to see. They want to see touchdowns. They want to see offense. And it's going to frustrate a lot of defensive players and a lot of fans. But this is going to become the norm. And you know what? 5 years from now, this won't even be a conversation anymore. The NFL has learned that. No one complains about horse collar tackles anymore. No one complains about a lot of the stuff with the helmets and the helmet being a part of tackles. So it just becomes norm, and the NFL's learned that. And now they're just going to continue to change things to get the type of result they want in games.
Yeah. The other rule change was the kickoff rule, where I guess what they're trying to do is keep these full speed collisions to a minimum. What did you think about that? Because it looks, when I saw kind of how the lineup would look, it's definitely different. It's going to take some getting used to. And if you can get past that line there, man, we could see more kickoff returns brought back.
Yeah, this one is interesting because I am a watcher of XFL, USFL. If it's football, I'm going to watch it. So I've seen this before, and I've been wondering when this was going to come to the NFL, because they've been talking about taking these full collisions out of the game. And if you're really about safety, this definitely made sense, because when you have guys on the kickoff team running full speed into guys from the kick return team, you get massive collisions, which is fun to watch from a fan perspective. But ultimately for player safety, not always the best. They've taken out the wedge. They've taken out the wedge busters. They've taken out the amount of distance you could run as far as before the kickoff. Now you have to stand right there at the tee. You can't line up, you know, 5-10 yards back and get a running start. They've slowly been taking away from the kickoff. And so now it became a situation where for most teams, it made more sense just to eliminate kickoff by kicking it out of the end zone. And so now they're trying to figure out a way to reinstall kickoff and kickoff return and that exciting part of the game without putting those other rules back in that made it exciting. And I think this is the case. I'm actually not a detractor from this. I'm kind of okay with it after they've taken so much away. I think this is an interesting way to see how teams can figure out how to get yardage and get touchdowns and get good returns out of it. Because now you're playing other, you could put offensive linemen out there on kick return, which you never could do really before because of speed. You can use a lot of the tight ends. To me, this is going to be interesting. And this is where it's like, do you really want Ronnie Bell out there? Or now do you want Jordan Mason out there? A guy that's good at finding holes and being able to run the football. To me, it just kind of changed it. Maybe it's going to be exciting. Do I miss the old way? Of course, but they had already neutered that way. So let's find something new, something fresh, and maybe this will be cool. And I'm excited to see what happens to it in the year.
Yeah, it will be interesting for sure. Anything else before we take off here?
No, I mean, I'm just excited about the draft. Here we are. We're almost in April, and that means it's draft time. And so I'm excited about the draft because I've been breaking down the top tackles in the draft of this last week, and I've got some strong opinions on it, which is fun. I'm excited to get into some more content. I've had a busy personal life right now. And so I'm kind of excited to get back into the football and start talking that. So that's what I'm excited to talk about over the next several weeks, because the 49ers are going to kind of, the offseason is going to be completely shaped by what happens in that draft.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun, exciting time. And we're going to be here each Wednesday at 2:00 Pacific time to talk about the team, what's going on, and the draft. And then once that's finished, then we'll be talking about whatever's going on in 49er land. So thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Again, we'll be back next week. Ant, thanks. It was good to talk to you. And everybody, take a minute and be sure to subscribe to 49ers Cutback, where you'll see Ant, and subscribe to 49ers Camelot, where you'll see me, unfortunately for you, but sometimes I am there. So thanks again for watching. Hope everybody has a great rest of your week. Go Niners.
Go Niners.